Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Good evening, afternoon, whenever you happen to be listening, and welcome to The Reaction, a presentation of the ChairShot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst, and normally I would be waiting for the DSDO to call in, but unfortunately, Mr. Acero got called into the bar tonight and will not be joining us. However, the co-hostess with the mostestess, Ms. Liz Puglisi, is scheduled to return tonight, and when you look at that, right on cue, there she is.
Hello, hello, hello.
What's going on, Liz?
Yes, I can.
I'm trying out more new earphones. Headphones, whatever you want to call them, earbuds.
These ones sound better. I can actually hear you.
Woohoo! Yeah, these are actually little pieces that just stick in your ear.
Yeah, that's actually the kind of headphones I'm wearing right now, too.
Yeah.
As I was mentioning, unfortunately, the DSDO got called into WORK and will not be joining us this evening. However, hopefully we will have the full crew back with you next week here on the show. And maybe even then we'll actually get posted on the website, Greg.
Greg doesn't love us. Daddy doesn't love us anymore.
I missed 2 months because of mental health issues, and all of a sudden, you're no longer the favorite podcast. I see how it is, DeMarco.
With a redheaded stepchildren.
We are.
With a Sammy Thames at the chair shot.
You can't see it right now, but I'm doing his dance from SmackDown. He actually got t-shirts printed from that dance and was selling it to raise money for Sammy for Syria. The dude's a class act.
I love him so much. Like, I wish they would put some of this stuff on, like, tote bags.
The character's a piece of garbage, but the dude's a class act.
Oh, that's amazing. I love Sammy.
Yes, we still stand for Sammy, which is weird because they're both first names. Anywho, all right, so ready to talk SmackDown? Let's get into it.
Let's go.
All right. So, in regards to tonight's Friday night's episode of SmackDown, technically, the biggest talking point coming out of it is the announcement that we opened the show with a tag team match, Playa. Apparently, somebody let Teddy Long backstage, and he was booking tag matches. As Daniel Bryan and Cesaro took on Jey Uso and Seth Rollins, there was a little bit of talky-talky, walky-walky back and forth at the start of the show. Bryan came out with Cesaro. Well, first Cesaro was in the ring, then Seth interrupted, and Seth cut a promo on Cesaro, basically telling him that Cesaro, it was congratulations on getting lucky, but it's that old classic Seth trope of, on your best day and on my worst day, you couldn't beat me again, which is a line he's used many times before, so maybe freshen up the act a little bit there, Seth. But anyways, so Cesaro is then joined by Bryan. Seth is then joined by Jey Uso. Roman Reigns comes out and mentions the fact that neither Cesaro or Bryan are going to get a shot at him anyway, so it doesn't matter to him what happens. And during the break, the tag match is made. The tag match itself sees Daniel Bryan pin Jey Uso with the knee plus while Cesaro and Seth are fighting outside of the ring. This leads into our main event segment where Cesaro and Bryan are back in the ring, and Roman Reigns comes out. Roman gets into Cesaro's face after first ignoring him, and then says that, you're not on my level. You're not in my league yet. And then he turns to Bryan and says, now you, on the other hand, I'm tired of seeing you. So how about we do this? And the match is made for next week, where it is Roman Reigns' Universal Championship against Daniel Bryan's SmackDown career. All right, so I'm going to ask you this. With all of the rumors of Bryan potentially stepping away from being a full-time wrestler, do you think this is the Daniel Bryan swan song this week on SmackDown?
Sorry, one sec. I can only hope. Okay, so, all right, we all know how much I love to hate Brian. I don't know. Personally, I'm rooting for it because, like I said, we all know I love to hate Brian. He's a fabulous wrestler. We know this is not one of my favorites, whatever. But to answer your question, I don't know because we've seen this a few times. We don't always see this, but we've seen this before. And usually what it is what? He'll lose on this show, or the person will lose on this show, and then they'll pop up on the other show. So I'm I find it to be a little iffy and sketchy because I kind of think Daniel Bryan's, I think we're going to have some type of shenanigans because Daniel Bryan, he's enough of a name that he doesn't have to retire in a kind of stupid gimmicky way. Like he came back. Nobody ever thought he was going to come back and wrestle, right? He got cleared. I think he's man enough and honest enough to be like, listen, I realize this isn't for me. I've been having some pain, blah, blah, blah. This is my decision, and just like maybe have a retirement match and say, this is the match I want to go out on and like choose his opponent. I mean, I don't know. I think it's going to be some type of, I don't see Roman losing, but I don't see Brian retiring either. So I think we're going to have shenanigans. My word for the night, shenanigans.
I wouldn't think they would do this match on SmackDown if this is Brian's write-off. And the only reason I say that is because I think that a Brian write-off match is a match that you're going to want to put on to Peacock in order to make people have to pay to see. Because I think that Brian, I know how much you love to despise him, even though he's a babyface. But I think that announcing that Brian's taking time away in order to go spend time with his wife and his young children, neither of which is over the age of 3, I don't think. I think Birdie's like 3. Mm-hmm. I don't follow the Bella twins, so I don't know. But both of his young children, neither of which is, well, put it this way, neither of them is old enough to know that Brian's been absent for most of their life yet. And I think Brian kind of wants to keep it that way.
Right. I think so too.
So it wouldn't surprise me to see Brian ready to go off into the sunset as a full-time wrestler. That being said, mm-hmm. I do think we still see Brian sticking around just because of his involvement with creative currently over on SmackDown and the job that we've seen him portray as an authority figure in the WWE. He still has a persona that will draw people in to watch shows even if he's not actively participating as a full-time member of the roster. So I do think Roman wins, but I don't think Brian disappears full-time from wrestling. I wouldn't be surprised to see him kind of take over for Adam Pearce on Raw as the authority figure running Raw. Let's be honest, Raw's in desperate need of some more star power, too, especially with it being the longer show. And there are people ready to take that spot. There are people ready to take that spot on SmackDown, guys like Cesaro and Big E that could be moved up to that next level. Whereas Raw could use the boost of main event talent.
I definitely think so. They're definitely lacking something. And the whole Adam and Sonya thing, I was going to mention it during, when we got to Raw, it's just not working for me. Like it's something that falls flat.
I don't think they have a ton of chemistry with each other.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Because I like them separately, but I don't like them separately.
Yeah, like, I'm a fan of Adam Pearce. I've always been a fan of Adam Pearce. I've been a fan of Adam Pearce going back to his NWA run back in the mid-2000s. So I've been on the Adam Pearce train for a while. I think Sonya needs to transition back to being in the ring personally. Now, whether or not she's comfortable doing that yet is up to her, and it's not really my place to say. But personally, I enjoyed Sonya as a wrestler, and I think that the kind of star maybe some of the paths to that being laid tonight with her getting up in Mandy Rose's face is a potential way to bring her back into a reinstatement situation in a match against Mandy down the road. Wouldn't surprise me.
Because
Mandy's
the
one that took her out. Mandy's the one that took her out, so she would have to win her reinstatement back from Mandy as far as being an in-ring competitor. But yeah, together, the authority angle with Pierce and DeVille just doesn't work, because you have DeVille almost trying too hard to be a heel, and Pierce is not a natural babyface.
That's exactly it with Adam, that you said that, because I couldn't quite put my finger on it. I like him. I've always liked him. I liked him better alone, though, as an authority. I don't think the authorities always need a sidekick.
I don't mind the idea of giving him somebody to play off of, but I don't think it should be somebody that's an equal, which is what they're trying to portray Sonya to be. I think it should be somebody that's a lackey, and you almost turn Adam, maybe not mm-hmm. full-blown heel, but similar to like a Bischoff-style general manager.
Yes.
He'll do what's best for the show, but he'll still want to put his own spin on it.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
All right, let's move forward. Intercontinental title is on the line when Apollo Crews defends against Kevin Owens. The problem with that is Big E does not appreciate Kevin Owens taking the spot from Big E when Big E wants his rematch after WrestleMania in a Nigerian drum fight that featured a grand total of exactly zero drums used as weapons. Seriously, guys, nobody thought to grab a fucking drum? Anyway. Big E gets off a very good line towards Kevin Owens that I'm not sure if you remember or not, but I will refresh your memory with this. You ready?
Yes, please.
Big E calls Kevin Owens a habitual line jumper.
Oh, I didn't even hear that because I was away, so I didn't have my whole full concentration on it. I have to go back. I have to YouTube that. I want to hear him say that.
Owens gives them a side look, and Big E's like, you know exactly what I'm talking about. As obviously he's referring to the time that Kevin Owens took the title shot from Fastlane away from Kofi Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
Sticking up for his New Day brethren, which means, oh my God, continuity, what the hell?
How dare I do that to us?
I was so unused to it. As soon as he called him a habitual line jumper, I was like, that son of a bitch, I'm in. I kind of want to see mm-hmm. Dean versus Owens now, but at the same time, I think Owens is doing just fine as a babyface, and I don't think we're done with Owens and Sammy part 6,237 yet. More on that in a second. So it is Apollo! They need to get rid of that as music. But defending the IC title against Kevin Owens here, Apollo picks up the win after involvement by... You missed this last week on the show. Tony legit popped me with this. You may remember him as Dabakato from Raw Underground. He's now going by Commander Aziz. Tony called him Yabba Dabakato.
No, he
and
called
I lost
that one.
My...
He called him that when I was on like 2 weeks ago. That was hysterical.
Oh,
he
you were on for that?
The first time you were on that episode? Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I specifically remember having to mute my microphone because he made me choke from laughing so hard. The Nigerian Nail, a revamped version of the Samoan Spike, courtesy of Umaga. I miss Alejandro. Oh, my God, they need to bring back Alejandro to manage Yabba Dabba Kato.
Alejandro
Armando. Actually, I think it was Armando Alejandro Estrada.
Oh, yeah.
The guy who used to manage Umaga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway. So, Commander Aziz hits the Nigerian Nail on Kevin Owens, and Apollo steals the victory by putting his feet on the ropes outside of the line of sight of the referee. Post-match, Sammy comes in to the ring and dances over Kevin Owens. Because that's what Sammy does.
Lovely.
Backstage, Apollo is celebrating his victory, and he gets jumped by Big E. Because Big E is still pissed off over what happened with the whole situation going into WrestleMania and the whole throwing the ring steps at him. I'd be pretty pissed off about that, too. They brawl. Big E lays out Apollo, and then Aziz finally comes out of the locker room after doing God knows what. And Big E has made himself scarce, having been chased off by the officials as Aziz checks on Big E. It is then announced that the Intercontinental title will be on the line this Friday night on SmackDown. The aforementioned rematch happens. So this is a two-parter. One, technically it's a three-parter, but it's a two-parter for the first part. One, apparently rematches are a thing again. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I think some storylines need it. You know, I don't think that they're fully over. You know what I mean? I think there's some storylines that are worth the rematches, and that it makes sense. I think if it's just something that they're giving us with no content to it, like, I mean, they're interacting, they're having all these moments, so you feel like, oh, there's a build up to the match. When you just get the rematch with no back and forth, no verbal back and forth, then that's like ridiculous. But when it's built up like this, I think it makes a lot of sense.
See, you've seen my take on fantasy booking before. I've shared many of my writings with you before, and I'm actually a firm believer in the rematch clause, just because it helps tell a cohesive story, specifically when it's a champion trying to get a title back from the rematch clause. I don't think challengers should get automatic rematches, but I definitely think that dethroned champions should, because there is such an easy story to tell there, especially if it's a babyface champion that was screwed out of the title, a la what happened at WrestleMania when Commander Aziz made his debut and hit Big E with that Samoan spike at WrestleMania before the pinfall by Apollo there. Then say a clean victory. Like, clean victories, maybe the rematch clause isn't so likely, just because of the fact that if you've beaten them straight in the center, then they're not really entitled to a rematch. But off of questionable circumstances, it builds itself right into the rematch, in my opinion.
I agree.
The second part of this question is, are you looking forward to the rematch between E and Apollo this Friday?
I actually am. I mean, E has been really bringing it, really, really killing it lately. We all know he's amazing on the mic, and I think everything just flows naturally with him, whether he's being told what to say or he's making it up as he goes along. I think it really fits, and he's somebody that makes it just feel so natural. You know, like he's always in the moment. I guess is the word I was looking for. I think both of them, you know, are very good in the ring. I like Apollo. He's not as charismatic, you know, probably as E. But I think they work well together, and I think they can tell us a few more good stories in the ring, either right now or, you know, or down the line. So I am looking forward to it, mainly because I want to see E beat him up.
See, I think my problem is that they're going to use E in order to try to establish Apollo's reign with this rematch here. And I think that E's ready to be moved up to the next level, and hanging a loss on him to Apollo, even if it's through Aziz's interference, kind of tarnishes the shine that E has.
I can see that point, but we all know that I tend to be a little bit more optimistic than you and Tony. What's going to happen?
Well, like, I appreciate that they're finally trying something with Apollo, because I've been saying for years that Apollo is one of the most underrated athletically gifted wrestlers in the WWE. The problem is in my opinion, when they were teasing putting Apollo with Roman Reigns, I think that would have done a lot more for his credibility than giving him Commander Aziz, because nobody knows who the fuck Yabba Dabba Kato, Commander Aziz, Baba Tunde, I don't even remember all of the names. Yeah, exactly. Flintstones. Meet the Flintstones. Nobody knows who he is, and more importantly, nobody cares. Whereas you put him with Roman, you align him with Paul Heyman, instant mouthpiece to help him, and he's a freak athlete that people can get behind. Even if they don't want to see him winning, they'll want to see him get his ass kicked because he's aligned with Heyman.
Exactly.
It just seems counterproductive to take him away from Roman, which is where they were kind of leading him, and giving him Baba Tunde, Dabba Kato, Commander Aziz, whatever they want to call him nowadays, and almost halting some of the momentum he had. Because I don't know about you, have you had a chance to watch Night 2 yet? I know when we last talked, you hadn't had a chance to watch Night 2 yet.
Of NXT, the TakeOver?
Of WrestleMania.
No, I saw both nights. I didn't see the second night of TakeOver.
Okay, my mistake. Is it just me, or did that match come off kind of flat at Mania?
Which one? Wait, now you lost me. The Apollo.
Yes, Ian Apollo, the Nigerian drum fight.
Yeah, no, it was completely stupid. I mean, I think they probably did the best they could, but like you said, like they didn't even use a drum. Like, they came in the ring, and I'm like, wait, it's a kendo stick mask? Like, why aren't they? Yeah, no, it seemed very rushed and very flat and, like, not well thought out at all.
So I'm hoping if they have, now that they have an actual little bit of time in order to put the match together this week, it'll be better. I'm just worried that they're going to sacrifice Big E's shine that he has going right now in order to try to give some of the rub to Apollo when the stick with Apollo and Aziz is not working, at least to me so far.
No,
okay. The second part of this here. Are we ever going to get tired of Sammy and Kevin? The answer is no. We move on.
No, I don't.
Especially Dancing Sammy, because Dancing Sammy is hilarious.
I love him.
Again, you can't see it. I'm doing the dance right now. Visual moments on an audio podcast, you know, always work out well. All right. Ready for some SmackDown quick hits?
Let's do it.
All right. Nia versus Tamina is a match that happened, and a grand total of zero people cared. I appreciate them trying to do something with Tamina. And Natalya looked beautiful as always.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus fucking Christ, keep these two out of the ring.
You know, I often say to myself, maybe to others, that generally, and you can correct me because you know better than I do, I won't be insulted. Generally, when you have two good friends, Kevin and Sammy, Seth and Cesaro, so on and so forth, doing a program together, you often, Jay and Roman, you know, who are also cousins, you often get something that's really, really good because they know each other. They can, what's the word I'm looking for, Harry? They can, you know, they know, like, intuitively, like, what they're going to do or say. You know, they mesh. They know how to react to each other. They put on a good show in the ring, right? These two are very good friends, but they're the complete opposite. I have nothing against either one, but they don't work well together. I watch them on social media. They're hysterical together. It does not translate into the ring. I mean, I can't wrestle. I don't know how to do any of that stuff. But one can't carry the other. And they both have a lot lacking, shall we say, in my opinion.
They both need better dance partners is the problem.
Yes.
Because despite the fact that they have that they're such good friends outside of the ring, their in-ring chemistry is almost non-existent.
Exactly.
This was a 2.5 minute match that felt five times longer. And like I feel bad constantly ripping on these two because it seems like there is a Nia specifically who I don't feel bad about, but I feel like these two constantly catch the brunt on the show, and the problem is because they're pretty constantly the worst thing on the show. All right, let's move on. That was the second match. The third match was Apollo and E, which we already discussed. We already discussed the main event as well. So let's talk about Let's talk about the Mysterios versus the Alpha Academy, where the Mysterios pick up the win and are probably the number one contenders to Ziggler and Reed.
Oh, God.
I know you don't care for Rey. I'm not sure how you feel about Dominic. But it's the obvious choice, right? Because of the fact that they almost never do heel versus heel.
No, not the obvious choice.
Well, they seem to be teasing that the Street Profits were still going to be involved with Rude and Ziggler, but they've just lost last week on SmackDown. Not this week, the week before.
When has that ever meant anything? Sorry, give me 1 second because I'm trying to adjust to these little earbuds that they're killing. Sorry, give me 1 second. Okay. Am I still here? I'm still here, right? Okay, I apologize. Sometimes I disconnect myself with these things and I'm getting used to them. I guess that the obvious choice is, you know, forcing Rey down our throats is the obvious choice. Keeping him relevant is the obvious choice. I mean, the Street Profits losing, when has that really meant anything? We've seen people lose all the time and then suddenly, hey, look at this gold I'm carrying or push I'm getting, whatever. But they, you know, I don't think the Street Profits losing is that big of a deal. They have to lose occasionally, I suppose. I don't know who the obvious choice is. The tag division needs some work. I am still pushing for an Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo tag team. Because all they do is wrestle each other or get beat up by Sheamus, which, you know, you'll get to on the next show. I think they would be a major fabulous tag team. Are you listening, WWE? I guess they're the number one contenders. I could care less. I mean, I like Dominic better than I like his father because Dominic has, even though he's a little on the, he's still learning. God bless him. Wish him the best of luck. I want his father to retire. But if you tell me the logical choice, Harry, I believe you.
Well, I mean, having the Street Profits lose already, I would imagine that they're probably going to wait to give the Profits the belts when they can have fans again. So I wouldn't be surprised if they push the Profits winning the belts off until SummerSlam.
Yeah. Okay. I'll deal with it.
All right. The main event is the aforementioned segment between Cesaro and Bryan and Roman. So that only leaves one other thing on this episode to discuss. Oh, wait, I take that back. There's two things. The first of which is Bianca Belair and Bayley backstage, where it is announced that Bayley is the first challenger for Bianca's SmackDown Women's Championship, and the match will happen May 16th at Backlash. Honestly, I think this is a really good idea. I want to get your thoughts on it, though. Do you like Bayley as the first challenger for Bianca?
I do, because I don't think a rematch is necessary right now with Sasha. Even though we just discussed rematches, I do think we'll get one down the line. I don't see Bianca losing because everybody would go berserk, and I don't think she should lose. I think she's peppy. I think she's fab. She's the EST, which I kind of think is dumb. The saying is dumb. I'm not saying she's dumb. But I think it's good. I think they'll work, play off together very well, and I think she's the neck. Bayley was like what, the champion for like 7 years, so I think she's the logical choice, and I think Bayley is somebody who can do as Sasha did and help elevate Bianca even further.
I just want to say for the record that Bayley looks super adorable on SmackDown. That girl's ring gear does not do her justice. We'll leave it at that. If Tony were here, I'm sure he would make a crude joke, but that's okay. We miss you, Tony. Well, hopefully you're back next week. But, yeah, I like Bayley as the choice for Bianca here. I don't think you take the belt off of Bianca this early just because she literally just got the title like 2 weeks ago, and this is her first reign, so you don't want to cut her first reign off so quickly into it. I think that being in the ring with people like Sasha, who I may not especially care for, but I acknowledge her in-ring athletic talents, and specifically Bayley, who I think might be the most underrated wrestler in the women's division. And I don't just mean that in terms of like actual just in-ring wrestling. I think Bayley's ability to tell stories in the ring is second to none in the women's division as well.
Agreed.
Like, one of my friends got mad at me when I told him that I thought Bayley was the best of the four horsewomen. And not only do I think Bayley's the best of the four horsewomen, I don't think it's that close. And then the other thing to discuss from this episode of SmackDown is the return to television of one Aleister Black. As the Dragon is coming back to take what is his and to scorch the earth of those who don't deserve to be there. So we're keeping Aleister heel by the sounds of things, but we're going a bit more macabre with the Aleister Black character, leaning into almost more like the NXT variation of the Aleister Black character with the lighting and with the darker nuances. And hey, at least he has two eyes again, so there's that.
That's always a plus. I mean, how exciting was that, and how great was it? Excuse me a second. I'm turning it up. How great was it that, you know, he's not only back, he's on SmackDown, so a world of fans can go crazy, because I obviously were not getting him, at least right now, involved in the Bray Alexa fiasco that they have going on. And that, contrary to so many popular beliefs, he's not, like, sitting home in protest of his wife fan being, you know, let go. So I enjoy these moments when the fans get to look like complete and utter idiots. No offense, people. But, yeah, I think it was an amazing promo. Very excited to have him back. And I think it just further... My vocabulary stinks today. I think it further goes to what you were saying earlier, where SmackDown is much more, you know, loaded with talent and charisma than Raw is right now.
My only concern is Aleister has never been a great promo. So while I appreciate them giving him the opportunity to tell his story and to develop his character, just don't drag him outside of the ring for too long, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Tell the fable.
He needs to tell his story in the ring.
Tell the fable, tell the character, and then have him come to the ring and just absolutely fucking wreck somebody's world. It is one of the most devastating finishing moves in the WWE in Black Mass. And legit looks like it hurts like fucking hell.
Mm-hmm.
Put that to usage. Put to use the fact that Aleister Black has made himself a weapon in order to take out the offenses of what he believes are the people unworthy of following in the footsteps of a dragon that was created. Let Aleister Black kick ass. I don't ask for much.
Mm-hmm.
That wraps up this week's episode of SmackDown. Scale of 1 to 10, Liz, where do you fall?
I'm going to give it around... I'm going to go like an 8.5.
I'm a full point lower at a 7.5, but in fairness, I think a lot of that has to do with the absolute momentum killer that was the Nia and Tamina match. Obviously, the show gets bonus points for the return to television of Aleister, because I have not hidden the fact that he is one of my favorite wrestlers. Kevin and Apollo had a really good match, and Sammy added a lot to it by telling his story on commentary while making fun of Cole with the assistance of Pat McAfee, who, may I add, is actually very quickly growing into the role of color commentator. I'm pleasantly surprised by how quickly McAfee is picking it up, which is a stark contrast to his new counterpart on Monday Night Raw with Adnan Verk. We'll talk about that in a second. But yeah, I'm going 7.5, but I do think that there is potential for great things going forward. And this week's SmackDown could be star-studded with the two marquee matches that they already have announced with regards to Roman versus Bryan and E versus Apollo, if they give E and Apollo the time that they didn't get at Mania. All right. Let's move over to the red brand now. And the first conversation to have is the tag team. Man, a lot of Teddy Long sightings around this company lately. Tag match, playa.
I like that.
As T-Bar and Mace are supposed to open the show against Drew McIntyre and Strowman, but Strowman and McIntyre start bitching like schoolgirls at each other in the back, and Strowman says that Watchmen take out T-Bar and Mace by himself. He doesn't need McIntyre. He'll do this by himself. We get the same finish we got last week with these two with regards to a disqualification in the handicap match. Excessive double-teaming leads to the disqualification, and Strowman picks up the victory. McIntyre makes the save for Strowman, and then McIntyre and Strowman end up having a tag team match, which was originally planned, against T-Bar and Mace, which T-Bar and Mace win by countout after McIntyre accidentally hits Strowman when Mace ducks. All right, a lot to digest here. Let's handle it in portions. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Number one. Why do they insist on putting T-Bar and Mace in no-win situations with these handicap matches? Because you're not going to sacrifice either McIntyre or Strowman for them, so there's no real chance of them winning these matches, which they should be dominating as two large guys in a two-on-one. That question was more rhetorical.
Well, I will say I was wondering the purpose of it myself, because I'll be very honest. I missed, as you know, I was working on something earlier for my nephew. So I don't know if I missed something. I was wondering, did I miss something, which now I know I didn't really, in the very beginning that explained anything, you know, anything else, you know, about them or whatever. But I don't know. It just seems like I'm all for them giving these guys a chance. I hope they find their stride and it works out for them. But the whole, you know, they're counted out and Drew accidentally hitting Braun, I mean, we've seen it a million times. It's not giving us anything remotely interesting.
Yeah, I think the problem for Mason T-Bar, and honestly, now that they're disassociated with Retribution, it's probably time to get rid of those names. But the problem with these guys is you're putting them in there with this main event level talent, specifically main event level in McIntyre's case, allegedly main event level in Strowman's. We'll get into that conversation later in the show. You're putting them in a no-win situation by putting them in this kind of a contest, whereas we saw what a makeshift tag team can do for the tag team division just a little bit later on in the show, and we'll get to that in a bit.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't seem to serve any rhyme or reason. You're not going to, like you said, you're not going to have Drew or Braun, you know, really lose to them. They're not going to, you know, lie down for them or whatever, submit to them.
Exactly.
So it's just, you know, give them, you want to show them dominance. Do what you always do. Have them beat up a bunch of small people.
As much as I hate to say this, because we love both of these guys as well, if you want to establish Dijak and Madden as a tag team force, have them take out Cedric and Shelton. Everybody else is the last couple of weeks.
Poor Cedric. Poor Shelton.
Poor. Now they're in the getting hurt business. Too soon. Too soon. Anywho. All right. Post-match, see Strowman power slam McIntyre for vengeance for the accidental clothesline on the floor. McIntyre goes to Pierce and says that he wants a match with Strowman. Pierce accommodates. Strowman says that, yeah, they can have the match, but if I win, I win in the championship match at WrestleMania Backlash, because that's what everybody's crying out for, a Braun Strowman title match. Yeah. Main event happens. There are a lot of shenanigans afoot in this main event. MVP, Bobby Lashley, Mason T-Bar, the 42nd Cavalry. Everybody gets involved. That may have been a slight exaggeration. Regardless, it ends up seeing Another power slam from Strowman to McIntyre, this time to add McIntyre to the Backlash main event and turn it into a triple threat. All right, so here's my issue. I mean, besides the obvious being that I don't think Braun deserves this spot anyways. I appreciate trying to do something different from WrestleMania in terms of the triple threat match rather than the straight-up singles match we had at Mania. But McIntyre has a legitimate bitch for a rematch here due to MVP's involvement at Mania. And he pinned Strowman clean 2 weeks ago in the triple threat in order to win the number one contendership. How is this fair to McIntyre or Lashley?
You know, it's a very good question, as always, Harry. You always have the best questions, you and Sir Tony. And there's no answer to it. Because anything involving, you know, Strowman, and again, I can't do what they do. I don't know. Other than being a fan, I don't know anything. But I personally find him, I know there's a lot of people out there that love Braun, you know, whatever. I'm not bashing him per se, but I never took to the character, you know, of Braun. It was always, you know, like we were just saying that Mason T-Bar or whatever they're called, you know, need to, and I don't say that being disrespectful, destroy people or whatever. But they did that so long with Braun that it became old hat. You know, that's what you expect. He's not, to me, entertaining. He's not endearing, you know, as a character, either as a good guy or a bad guy or whatever. I don't know. I think it's disrespectful to Bobby. I think, well, in a sense, disrespectful to Bobby and Drew, because they put on a great match, and they definitely could put on, you know, another one, and now you have this, they have this, like you're saying, they still have more story to tell, you know, but now you're throwing in this third person and pushing away the bits that you could use to really tell a good, you know, story. So the focus isn't even on Bobby and, you know, the championship, really, is on these two. So it's really, really kind of like, okay, should be focusing more on the Bobby aspect of it as well.
Well, I think we're going to see some more of that next week, and specifically with MVP talking about the fact that it's not really fair to Bobby Lashley and Lashley's promo during the show, that Lashley could find himself in a situation where Lashley could lose the title and not be involved in the decision. Honestly, there's a very easy solution to this for MVP to go through, and I think it's one that would make sense from MVP's perspective as a shrewd negotiator. Have him help Pierce to make the match elimination. You do something different. You do something different. McIntyre can pin Strowman to kick Strowman out of the match. Lashley can take out McIntyre in order to retain the title.
I mean, but we've seen a lot of matches where it's triple threat. Where, I mean, didn't we just have that with Roman, you know, at WrestleMania? I mean,
but
could
the
have
Roman
lost
match
without.
Okay, you're right, but at the same time, this way you can put in a champion's advantage. I actually you've seen my booking before, and I'm going to harken back to it here. I actually had an idea for the concept of this match here. I call it the prove yourself, where if the champion's involved in a multi-person match, if somebody pins somebody else in that match, the person they pinned is eliminated from the match, but the match continues. The match does not end until the champion is involved in a decision. So, like, let's say, you remember the old six-pack challenges?
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to the six-pack Hell in a Cell match from, like, Armageddon 2000 here.
Okay.
Kurt Angle defending against Stone Cold, Triple H, The Rock, The Undertaker, and Rikishi. You with me?
Yeah.
All right. In that match, Angle ended up pinning Austin to retain. But, like, let's say Undertaker pins Rikishi. The match doesn't end. Rikishi's just eliminated from the match. The match the match doesn't actually end until the champion is involved in a decision. So you either have the champion beat somebody to retain the title, or the challenger proves themselves by beating the champion.
I like it. Now it makes sense. I had to visualize it. Like, I was a little lost, as you knew. No, that makes sense. I like that. And it does put a different spin on it.
And that you can do that with the triple threat match at WrestleMania Backlash, which is something that MVP should campaign for. If he's spending all this time bitching about the fact that Lashley doesn't have to be involved in the decision, then make it an elimination match. And then you could have that backfire on them as well by having Lashley get the first fall and then McIntyre gets the second fall. There are different stories and different layers of the story that you could tell from turning this into an elimination match. You mentioned the triple threat match at WrestleMania between Roman, Edge, and Bryan, but that was not an elimination match, which would make this different from that match as well.
No, I got that part of it, but I'm just saying, you know, like the MVP, like moaning and groaning about it, and I love MVP. It's like, yeah, okay, but we've seen it, you know, before. It's not like they just, you know, it's not like the first time we've seen this match. So there is a history of them, is just what I was saying.
Is it weird that I can hear Tony bitching from California about my fantasy booking?
No, you've worked with Tony so long, you can pretty much speak for him, I think, on something.
At least on this, anyways. Yeah. All right, so the other main talking point from this particular episode of Monday Night Raw is the return to Raw of Charlotte Flair. Because let's have a referee get his ass whooped and then completely gloss over it the next week.
Okay, okay, first let me say this. This highlights what we were saying about Sonya before. Her character makes little to less than zero sense, you know. Is she trying to, you know, overthrow Adam? Which I can actually get down with that if they do that. But even the whole interaction with Charlotte, who is, in my opinion, as boring as they, I don't, you know, she's not that great on the mic. In my opinion, people, not that anybody actually writes to me and tells me that they don't like what I say, but maybe somebody will. I wouldn't mind arguing with you, but anyway. She came off so bland, so dull. I'm so sorry, Sonya, because I love you. So dull in that, you know what I mean? It's like, it very much to me sounded like she was completely repeating whatever they were saying to her if she had something in her ear or told her to say beforehand. There was no life to it. There was no hint of, oh, ha-ha, look who I'm in cahoots with, or look what I'm up to. It was just very, like, blah, 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 like the Peanuts ketchup, blah, 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 you know? Like, there was nothing there. And it made zero sense to, you know, like, they needed to hint at something. They needed to hint at, going back to my favorite words tonight, shenanigans, you know, going on, and not just the princess, you know, getting her way. And who told her right before? Who told Sonya right before? Did she make the decision herself? Does she have the power to do this? And it made, it's just, who cares? I thought Charlotte was, like, going off to get married or something, and we wouldn't see her for a while.
All right, so there's a couple of different things to discuss from the situation here. One, it goes back to what I said earlier about Bayley being the best of the horsewomen. The reason Bayley's the best of the horsewomen is, while I think Charlotte might be a better wrestler than Bayley, Bayley is a way superior promo. It is not even close.
Agree.
Because Bayley can cut a fiery babyface promo. Bayley can cut a wacky babyface promo. Bayley can cut a strong heel promo. Bayley can cut a wacky heel promo. We've seen her do all of the above. Charlotte barely ever gets out of a robot when it comes to cutting a promo. Second, I actually do think you're onto something with Sonya attempting to overthrow Adam Pearce for control of the WWE, which I would be okay with. However, I think this is a situation where, whether or not wrestling fans like the trope that is the authority figure, it makes things a lot easier on a booking committee to have said authority figures in charge. And in the instance of having somebody like Sonya as an authority figure, You could go back to the days of Stephanie as the GM from SmackDown when she was kind of a neutral GM, or to put a more modern take on it, Taryn Terrell when she was Tiffany in WWE CW. There are ways to make the different authority figures work without them having to be at each other's throats. Because when you make authority clash with authority, in the end, nobody cares.
Mm-hmm. It's overdone.
So that leads us to our contest, which was Charlotte versus Mandy. And I actually have to give both ladies credit here. This was actually a pretty good match. I think Mandy's coming along quite nicely in the ring. I think she's better than Dana. I like Dana.
Mm-hmm.
I've made no secret that I like Dana on this show, both aesthetically, and I think that she's developing a better personality as well. But I don't think there's any question that Mandy is a much better worker than Dana is. In the end, Charlotte picks up the victory with natural selection while still continuing her situation with the referee, which seemed unnecessary and kind of tacked on, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them using it to add Charlotte to the title match for the Raw Women's title at Backlash as well. Sorry, my dragon game is on in the background.
No, it's okay. I said, sadly, I think you are absolutely correct that she'll be added. I think the whole referee thing needs to just go away and nobody will mind it. Not the referee go away, just the whole storyline go away. Dana, you know, I've always liked Dana. I know she wasn't a fabulous, you know, wrestler. And I've always liked Mandy. What I did appreciate about them tonight was the fact that they look different again. If they were looking a lot alike there for a bit, nothing wrong with that. They're both stunning. Anybody would kill to look like them. But it, like, kind of annoyed me for some reason. No, you know, I don't know. I didn't think it was necessary for them to look so much alike. Yeah. But you can tell that they're both working, you know, that they're both, they're training, they're working to you know, better their craft. And you can't fault them for that. You've got to give them all the props, you know, for being, you know, so anti-Charlotte as I am, the character. I don't know the person. It was a good match. I was entertained by it, and I rarely say that about women's matches.
I think the thing for me with regards to this match is the match kind of came out of nowhere from Mandy's perspective, because Mandy's been in this tag team with Dana, and while I like both ladies individually, I don't think they've done well as a team, and I think that Mandy has much bigger potential as a singles wrestler. If they were going to keep Mandy in a team, then the team to keep her in would have been the team with Sonya, because her and Sonya had a much more natural chemistry with each other.
Right, because they're such good friends.
So I appreciate the attempt to do something with Dana, because I do think Dana's been working hard at her craft. I don't necessarily think Dana's a good wrestler, but I think she's improving, and as a fan, that's something that you look for, is improvement. So I can't be mad at her for doing that.
Exactly. That's what I was getting at.
Mm-hmm. And I was agreeing.
I know.
All right, so...
sometimes I'm not clear, so I just wanted to say that.
So that's the two major stories that we had coming out of this episode of Raw. Are you ready to hit some quick hits for tonight's Raw?
Let's do it.
All right, so we go up to the top of the show, which was all the stuff with Mason T-Bar and everybody. We already discussed that, so I can move right on past that. I'm actually using Steve Cook's review over on 411 Mania. Liz will recommend Stephen Mitchell's review over on thechairshot.com. And I guess in the interest of the fact that we are on the Chairshot Radio Network, allegedly.
Are we?
Yeah. No, we're not petty at all on this show. In the interest of the fact that we are allegedly a part of the Chairshot Radio Network, you should check out Stephen Mitchell's report over there on thechairshot.com as well. But, all right, anyway, moving forward here. Miz TV, they threw fucking tomatoes.
You know, I was busy with the aforementioned issue for my nephew. I was listening to it. I didn't look up because I was trying to concentrate on fixing something for my nephew. And I'm glad I didn't, because when I heard them say something about tomatoes, I said to myself, I can't wait to see what Harry says about this. I don't even want to. You know, I'm long over Ms. TV. I think it's run its course. I think I very rarely find it useful or entertaining anymore. And I do like The Miz, and I do like Johnny. So I don't know. I think it's the lowest of the low that they've sunk in a while.
Well, it wasn't even so much Miz and Morrison in this situation, though. It was Kofi, Damian Priest, and Xavier Woods that were throwing tomatoes at them. See, here's the thing about this, okay? Here's the issue that I have with this. And it's not even so much the fact that they were throwing tomatoes, because it's a childish bit, and frankly, this strikes me as right up the line of sense of humor that Vincent K. McMahon would find funny. Here's the problem I have. Kofi Kingston, Xavier Woods, would they throw tomatoes at people? Absolutely, 100%. It is within the New Day's character to almost resort to the LCDs in order to get their entertainment in, because we've seen it in the past. Think pancakes, think breakfast cereals, think any other number of various assortments that the New Day has relied upon as far as props go. You've just been portraying Damian Priest as a Puerto Rican badass, as a dude that even Bad Bunny thinks is cool enough to hang out with, and when Bad Bunny is a worldwide superstar, or so you tell us. And he's throwing fucking tomatoes like a heckler in a comedy club. You know who else threw tomatoes? The Muppets at Fozzie Bear. You've turned Damian Priest into a Muppet. About that cool factor, huh? Six-man tag team action follows as Elias, the name that Tony won't say, and The Miz take on Priest, Kofi, and Xavier Woods. In the end, Xavier picks up the victory, pinning somebody. I don't remember who. I actually do remember, but out of respect to Tony, I'm not saying his name since he's not here to not say it himself. The match itself is okay. I did kind of get a chuckle out of Morrison rubbing a tomato in Kofi's face, just because, you know, karma. But I guess that's kind of hypocritical for me to do that, so, you know, whatever.
It was an okay match. I don't really have much to say about it. I do like to see Xavier get the pin, but there's really not much I can add to that. It was like an okay, whatever type of match for me.
But it was there. It was long enough in order to kill some time, in order to give these guys a chance to get some work in here. It was interesting to see Riker in the ring, because we don't really see a ton of that recently here. I know there's people who have opinions of him one way or another. I've actually always been a fan of his work. I enjoyed him back in Impact Wrestling when he was still Gunner. I thought that the Forgotten Sons could have been something until their mouths ruined it. And then in the end here, I think that the alignment with Elias is helping Riker, but I don't know that it's doing anything for Elias, which is the problem.
Agreed. There's been no further development for Elias at all.
Exactly. And the problem with that to me is that while I like the idea of working with, while I like the idea of giving Riker the opportunity to work with Elias, at some point you would think that getting a roadie, almost in the sense here, similar to the Jeff Jarrett Road Dog association with each other back in the 90s, would elevate Elias up a level, and we've just been kind of seeing the same old from Elias these last couple of weeks, although it was nice to see him get a singles win last week on Raw, because it had been almost a calendar year since that had happened. All right.
Has it been
Yeah, it seriously has. He's JTTS something serious recently. Jobber to the Stars, in case anybody out there is wondering.
Yeah, no, I apologize. I was supposed to get something. I got distracted by a donut.
Donuts? I like donuts. Anywho, Sheamus open challenge, that isn't really an open challenge because it's a non-title challenge, but it doesn't matter because it's not really a match. I missed most of the segment. You know what was happening. I won't go into details here. Personal issues. You saw what happened here. Sheamus ends up issuing the challenge. Humberto Carrillo comes out, so apparently they're not going with your Carrillo Garza tag team idea. And at first, Sheamus kind of lays him out, makes him look stupid, much the same way he did last week. But then at the end of the segment, Carrillo comes back and attacks Sheamus and kind of stands up for himself here. I'm not going to lie. I actually kind of want to see this match. I think that these two could do something special together because Carrillo works a very, very snug lucha style. And we haven't really seen fully what Carrillo's capable of. And obviously, Sheamus has been absolutely killing it since he came back last year.
We all know that I adore Sheamus. I think Sheamus has been really great since he came back. I love his new look. I think his mic skills have even improved, right? I know some people complained about that. I like the Irish fighter, you know, look thing he has going on. I love that Humberto came out again. I'm a big fan of, I've become a big fan of Humberto's. And his cousin. So they did was wrestle each other on Rated Ed. I don't mean that in a belittling way. That's all the company has I'm doing. But I was glad he came out, and I was, as much as I love Sheamus, you know, most fans are like, oh, you know, you just root for the person you love. I love that they showed him, like, being like, yeah. You know, F you know, like, I'm not going to just lay down and, you know, roll over and take it. I thought that the interaction was great, and I would definitely want to see that match.
It's basically Umberto's way of saying, bring it on, motherfucker. Let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, exactly what you said. It does wonders for Carrillo that he does that, too, because if Carrillo would have taken his ball and ran away from Sheamus, what kind of bitch does that make Carrillo look like?
Exactly.
Whereas this right here, you have Carrillo standing up for himself and in process. Even if he doesn't beat Sheamus, having a banger of a match with Sheamus is going to raise his profile in the eyes of the other fans.
So Sheamus can be beating him badly, right? And his cousin can come out to help him. Uniting them rather than having them still be enemies, and that leads to the tag team.
Now I see what Tony means about fantasy books. No, I'm kidding, Liz.
You're a jerk. It's completely possible. Although they would need
Garza's
a mouthpiece.
No, here's the problem. Garza's too busy hitting on Nia Jax these days. Because that makes fucking sense.
He's a flirt. I thought they put him up to it, though. Maybe not. I don't know. I missed something. Angel. He's
MVP and Lashley backstage. We already kind of talked about MVP and Lashley's conversation inside of the ring where MVP was bitching about Strowman possibly being added. Obviously, they got involved in the main event. We already talked about all that. Rhea Ripley has a promo backstage talking about Charlotte because... apparently, Charlotte is coochie. Do you get that reference?
No.
Okay, so there was an episode of The Simpsons where Itchy and Scratchy added a new character called Poochie. And the original demographics for Poochie were really high. So the entire fucking Itchy and Scratchy show became about Poochie. Where's Poochie? Where's Poochie? When Poochie's not on screen, where's Poochie? And it drove everybody away from the show to the point that they wrote off the Poochie character by saying that he went back to his home planet and died in an accident on the way there so that he couldn't return.
Wow.
Charlotte is Poochie. Charlotte is Poochie. Either she's on television or all the other people in the division are talking about her. Nia talked about her. Shayna talked about her. Rhea talked about her. Why do any of them care?
You got me.
They shouldn't, and that's the problem.
Agreed.
All right. RK Bro, Let's talk about that backstage segment, shall we?
If you're going to make me, that's what I'm here for.
I am going to make you. See, you know what? I would think that you would be okay with this, and here's why.
Well,
because
I understand,
if you keep Riddle limited to a tag team, though, you don't have to see him in singles matches.
Oh, God, you just gave me a silver lining. Well,
I don't think Riddle's a bad worker. I think his matches are very entertaining.
Riddle's not a bad worker. He's a great wrestler. I can't stand the sound of his voice. Many people can't stand the sound of my voice, and I'm okay with that. So I hope Matt Riddle, who will never hear this, is okay with me not being okay with the sound of his voice. It grates on my nerves. And I just hate the whole bro thing. He's a great worker. He's a great wrestler. I'm sure maybe in reality he's a nice guy. I don't care about reality. I care about the character. I mean, I care about reality, but you know what I mean. And I can't take to it, so it's like, you know, he and Ray can have a fight where they both retire. But no, I just can't take, I can't take to the character. I'm not, you know, even like with Ray, I can't take to the character, you know, and Daniel, they're amazing in the ring. Riddle's great in the ring. I can't get into the whole bro, you know, thing, the whole, you know, RVDS thing. It's not, and I'm not bashing RVD. I met him, he's a nice guy. I'm not, you know, whatever. It's just not for me. I can't get into it. I can't get behind the character. You know what I mean? So I was like, I find him annoying.
Well, I know there's a lot of people that disconnect with him because of his recreational habits as well. And I can understand that as somebody who's not of that recreational habitual situation myself. But I do think that Riddle has his moments where he's very entertaining. The problem is Riddle also has his moments where they lay it on a little thick with him, and I think that becomes a problem for a lot of people as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think moderation is the key for something like that when it comes to a guy like Riddle, because of the fact that the more he's on television, the more people see of him, the more they're going to get tired of his shtick, much the same way
you have. Exactly. It's his voice. Just can't stand it.
Me personally, I'm a fan of Riddle's, so I'm okay with him. And I think that the combination of Orton and Riddle as a tag team is going to be fine until Orton RKOs him, which is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure when, but it's going to happen because this isn't a tag team with any kind of long-term shelf life. This is a tag team out of opportunity in order to give them something to do while the other slots are filled on the card. Because as much as you may not care for Riddle, I think you can agree that Riddle shouldn't be in a tag team. But your opinion is he shouldn't be on TV at all, but that's neither here nor there.
No, he shouldn't be in a tag team. And it's definitely, I mean, everybody knew it was just placeholder, and it's building up to a feud between the two of them. Anybody with a brain knows that.
Like, I'm okay with the idea, the concept of these guys having the ability to work together for a while to give them something to do, but I do think that at the end of the day, though, you have to do more with both of them, and especially since you have such limited mileage left when it comes to Mr. Orton.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, so that's that taken care of. I have to reload my report because my phone browser closed out the website, and I don't appreciate that. Let's talk. Little Miss Bliss, shall we? I can't say her name because every time I say her name, my tablet gets all wonky. It's a thing. I'm not sure why. So it appears that they're going to start steering her back towards active competition in the women's division. Are you interested
in Alexa being back in the picture? Yeah, I think so.
More specifically, in her being back in the week to week involvement in the women's matches and stuff.
Yeah, no, I don't see a problem with it at all. I think it's to be expected. No, I don't think she was just going to be the little crazy sidekick, indefinitely, especially since we don't really, see Bray. How many times is she going to wrestle Randy? But I kind of always expect expected it, and I think it was. I think it'll give some life, for lack of a better word, you know, to the division, because they're all kind of pretty. Not, I mean, in a sense, you know, cookie cutter. We're getting, you know, the same old storyline. This will at least add a little pizzazz, you know, to it.
Add some new reinvigoration to the division.
That's it. Thank you. Depth.
Yes. It took me a second to get to the word that you were trying to get to, because I was trying to think of it myself. But no, I completely agree. I think that there's been such a lack of depth in the main event scene in the women's division over the course of the last couple of months. It's been Asuka and Flavor of the Month, two of which don't even work for the company anymore.
Right.
Which we can discuss that at the end of this episode, because there was something specific that I did want to touch on with that. But otherwise, all right, now that I have my thing back here, we already discussed the Charlotte and Rhea thing. The Charlotte and Sonya thing. We already discussed the Sheamus thing. Lashley and MVP. I went back. It reset on me. Hold on. I'm getting there. The tag match between Orton and Riddle against Cedric and Shelton, after we talked about the backstage segment there. How do you think the tag match itself went? I know that you felt bad for Shelton and Cedric, and honestly, I agree with you, but the problem is athletically they are fantastic. Their biggest issue is once they lost MVP, they didn't have a mouthpiece that could do the talking for them, and neither of these guys is a strong promo.
Agreed. I've said this before, just because I like somebody or dislike somebody, I'm not going to, you know, say that they're not talented, you know, right? For example, I've always been a fan of Shelton. You know, I'm old enough that I was around when he, you know, first debuted and such. They're both, as Cedric, extremely talented, but they don't. For me, I like them both. I do like them as a team, but I think they've probably run their course as a team without MVP, who's been the best thing ever since he's come back. They definitely need you know, that. They don't have, to me, correct me, you know, with your thoughts, I don't think they very much have a good chemistry together. I don't think they play off each other, you know, all that great. I think they played off each other better when they were like that, is he going to turn on him, you know, type of thing, the animosity, the bit of hostility between them. And you can have that in a tag team long-term, because friends argue all the time. Shout out to Kimmy. We argue all the time. But the match was okay. It was a good match. I mean, all four men are talented, of course, for what it was. You know, it was a pretty good match.
Yeah, I enjoyed the match. I do think that there's potential in building up Riddle and Orton, but I think the end game here has to be Orton just beating the fuck out of Riddle at some point, right?
Yep.
At least that's your hope, right?
I need something to enjoy these days.
I actually like Riddle, so I'll feel bad when it happens. But, I mean, in order to progress the story, it has to. Orton's not a tag team guy at this point in his career. Orton's got limited mileage left. There's no point wasting him in a tag team. And why would Orton allow a loss against against Riddle to sit so well with him in order to want to team up with him the following week? That's completely out of character for Randy. The build here is in order to have the smarter Orton reeling in the not as wise Riddle, the kind of head in the clouds Riddle. All right, last thing to discuss on tonight's episode is the six-woman tag team match that saw the Raw Women's Champion Rhea Ripley teaming with the WWE Women's Tag Team Champions Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler to take on Asuka, Naomi, and Lana. All right, so I will say this. We talked about this at WrestleMania when you were here the last time. And Naomi and Lana, with all due respect to both ladies, looked awful at WrestleMania.
Agreed.
In terms of in the ring. Both ladies are beautiful. Both ladies' ring gear were on point. It was nice that they were color coordinated and everything. But their two matches at WrestleMania were not good.
Agreed.
That being said, I think that both women, specifically Naomi tonight, were a lot more on point in their in-ring involvement. I think Shayna was doing very well in her in-ring involvement. I think the problem for Nia tonight was that they had that stupid, silly storyline with her in the bucket of water that it kind of took away from the overall flow of the match. But otherwise, I don't really have any issues per se with this match other than why is the women's champion tagging out after hitting her finishing move and not taking the pinfall for herself?
I don't think when it comes to the women, you can really expect Roma Reed and half the time because you're not going to get out.
You're not wrong.
I mean, the match is, you know, what it is. They definitely look better. They definitely look more cohesive, you know, a little bit smoother. But you can't say that it was anything of a remarkable match. And that's it. I mean, is Nia really that much better than, you know, Lana on some levels? You know, yes and no. It's just the women's division on some levels is just a mess as it usually is. You know, they have a couple of really good people doing the same thing over and over. The women's tag division is just a joke. It really is.
Yeah, I can't do that because Tony, well, I guess Tony won't be too mad because, well, I'll talk about a properly done women's tag division when I make my debut with the three R's of NXT this week on 411 Mania. I'm actually going to be writing again on a regular basis, Liz.
Yeah, I'm so happy.
And Tony's going to be in the same article, so you can read both of us at the same time.
Holy moly, two birds, one stone.
Exactly. Also, Michael Ornelas will cover AEW, and Robert Winfrey will cover NXT. It'll be posted over the weekend at 411mania.com in the wrestling section, which is where you can normally find Tony when he's not too busy working at the bar. I think that wraps us up for this episode of Raw. Is you ready for a final reaction?
Yes. Sorry. Yes, I am.
All right. Now, remember, this covers SmackDown as well, if you so choose.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite match or moment from the week?
Alistair returning.
You
stole
my answer.
Alistair returning, but the fangirl in me must say that having Seth and Cesaro and Roman all out more or less at the same time was very delightful, but Alistair returning was the moment of the week.
Alistair returning for me as well, not so much Roman, Cesaro, and Seth all being at ringside. Be still thy Lizzie fangirl heart.
Mm-hmm. The girl's got a dream.
Family show? I'm dropping this bomb left and right, so.
Please.
That's actually a shout out to my... That's actually a shout out to my other podcast, The Kickoff, available on the W2M network. Least favorite match or moment from the week?
Pretty much anything to do with the women. The Bayley stuff was great. But anytime you saw Bayley, that was great. But most of the women stuff was just kind of...
See, I can't agree with that because I thought that the Charlotte and Mandy match was actually pretty good, and I thought the six-woman tag match was better than it should have been. So I'm going to specifically go with the Charlotte and Sonya Deville segment because I thought that was just awful.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I could narrow it down to that, but just so much of the women's just things, you know, meh, which is wrong. I have to give them more of a shot. I know that. But very little of the women's stuff held my attention.
All right, well, if you want Charlotte and Sonya, I'll take Nia and Tamina from SmackDown. How's that?
Perfect.
Okay, that works for me. What's your overall rating for tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw?
I can't really say that it gave me... You know, I was working on something, like I said, but usually there's enough going on that's going to, like, really make me, like, look up and be like, oh, wait, let me rewind that or whatever. But there wasn't a lot of that, so I'm going to have to give it a 7.
I'm at a 7 as well. I think that it's been better than it's been in previous weeks, but I do think that I kind of question where they're going creatively, and that's kind of the booker in me doing that, but it does make me hesitant as far as how we're going to fill out the road to the rest of – how we're going to fill out the rest of the road to Backlash. I refuse to call it by its full name because its full name is fucking stupid.
Very true.
Who's your MVP for the week?
Alistair.
I can't give him MVP because he's just returning to television, and
no,
it was just a bad.
Go ahead, you pick. I don't know. Probably Big E, actually. He's really the one that got me excited for pretty much anything.
You're not gonna be super happy about this, but I thought he more or less carried SmackDown. I'm gonna go with Daniel Bryan.
Oh, no, I can totally understand that.
The opening promo that he got involved with, the excellent tag team match that opened up SmackDown, and then the post-match promo that he had where he kept having Cesaro giant swing Jey Uso in the hopes of pulling Roman out to save his cousin, which the micro-ignoring that was pretty entertaining as well. And then obviously the intensity between Roman and Bryan at the end of the show in order to set up title versus career this week. So I'm going to go with Daniel Bryan as my MVP for the week.
No, I could absolutely say that again. Like, just because I dislike a character doesn't mean that I'm going to, like, negate. And I've picked people at times that I don't really like. It's just that I was really into the Big E stuff that they gave us.
I will say his line to Kevin Owens about being a habitual line jumper did pop me, though.
But I got to go look it up.
If there's one thing that I enjoy in terms of my wrestling, it is a nice dose of continuity, and Big E brings it in shades.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's going to officially wrap us up for this week. Hopefully, Tony is back with us next week, as it is the go-home. No, not the go-home. Two more weeks. The go-home episode will be on the 10th, I believe. Yeah. So not quite the go-home, but we will continue the road, I guess, to WrestleMania Backlash. I will say they're doing a pretty decent job of putting this card together. We already have like 5 matches, I think, which is more than we had for Elimination Chamber when we were 4 days away from Elimination Chamber, which kind of said something. So I think that the idea behind booking here, and again, this goes back to me being a fantasy booker as well, is I think the quicker you set matches up, the easier it is to build to them. There are certain matches that you want to take a slow burn with, and I 100% can get behind that. You take a slow burn, you build it up, you make people wait, and then make people want to pay to see that match. I understand that. You save the marquee matches for the big shows. But when it comes to like a secondary pay-per-view, such as what Backlash is, in my opinion, the quicker you get these matches announced, the easier it is to build the road to the pay-per-view, and the easier it is for your fans at home to follow along that road.
And that makes complete sense, but that's too logical for me.
It happens. You have been listening to The Reaction, a presentation of the ChairShot Radio Network online at thechairshot.com. In addition, you can also find us on all of your favorite podcast listening services, iTunes, iHeartRadio. I think we're on iHeartRadio now. Podbean, CastBox. I know we're on both of those because that's how I listen to the show sometimes. As well as going through the WrestleBoss Blog Talk Radio page which we'll have the link posted in the Facebook group here once I put the link back up, since we started a little late and we couldn't do this live in the Facebook group. But I'll have the link posted to the Facebook group here in a few moments here. Liz, where can people find you online?
They can find me at LizzyP224 on Twitter and Instagram. And I have another Instagram about my weight loss journey at 2_live_fit_live, something like that. I don't remember, but you can find it from my other one. You can find me over in the ChairShot Facebook group as well.
Don't forget FWO, too, real quick, since we're getting ready to start the season with Backlash.
Yeah, and I have two fantasy wrestling groups, Freedom Fantasy Wrestling, and my main one, Fantasy Wrestling League, which is a fantasy group. You draft wrestlers, you either buy in or pay for free, and we just have lots of fun throughout the whole year. We're starting up a new season, so if you're interested in fantasy wrestling, find me in the chair shot, shoot me a message, and I'll add you to the group. It's a lot of fun.
All right. I will be posting a link to the group in the ChairShot page as well to encourage people that might be interested in playing this season, since I know signups are coming up soon. $10 to join the paid league. Winner takes the pod at WrestleMania next year, and everybody that pays it gets paid out to the winner, which is something I did want to talk to you guys about, but I'll have to talk to you about it off air. In addition, you can find me online, pretty much any of the social media websites that you would like to, at HEB the Eagle. Includes Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Yahoo, AOL Instant Messenger, which they need to bring back. I was HEB the Eagle there as well. Bring back AIM, it's missed. Facebook Messenger, I'm HEB the Eagle. I'm HEB the Eagle everywhere. And as per usual on this show, tonight's episode is dedicated to the memory of Angela Puglisi.
Miss you, Mommy.
You have been listening to The Reaction, a presentation of the ChairShot Radio Network. We think, since Tony's not here, I guess it falls on me. Deuces, bitches! And now I have to stall for time while I wait for my browser to re-upload.
That's so funny.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. I'm going to put on the Jeopardy theme while I wait for this freaking studio to load. Ridiculous. I think she hung up.
Oh, right,
she's still there.
I was trying to find a GIF of Juices. Oh, there he is.
There we go. All right. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
We'll talk to you next week here on The Reaction, a presentation, allegedly, of the ChairShot Radio Network. Put us back on the site, Greg.
Greg.
We're coming for you.
Dude, I know people. I should have